Welcome to the Holistic Health Show. I'm Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host. My first guest tonight is Dr. Scott McIntosh, who is Director of the Greater Rochester Tobacco Research Program, Associate Director of the Smoking Research Program, and Associate Professor, Division of Social and Behavioral Medicine, Community and Preventive Medicine at the University of Rochester in New York. His latest research is on self-help interventions for smoking cessation and behavioral changes with various populations, and he has received numerous grants and published many articles and book chapters. Last year, he received the American Cancer Society's first Fight Back Award for his commitment to helping people quit smoking and reducing the cancer incidence. He can be reached at the University of Rochester Medical School. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Scott, and I hope we'll have a good session today.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you, Scott. You've done a lot of work with smoking cessation and cancer prevention, and both of these are very important aspects of holistic health and public health. How did you get started in this area of practice?
Well, when I was an undergraduate psychology student at Iowa State University, I saw a flyer on the wall to be a research assistant and be an independent study student for credit, and it was a stop smoking clinic and a smoking cessation research team.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked it so much, I did it for about 2 years, and I went on to get my master's degree and my PhD in counseling psychology, and I always stayed close to research related to substance abuse and special populations and behavior change. And after I was a research assistant professor at the University of Miami, mm-hmm. I'd always kept in touch with my old mentor from back in my undergrad days, and he didn't have a position for me, but knew of someone in Rochester, New York, who was looking for a project manager and colleague. And
right.
So I landed this spot about 13 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Great. So what have you found to be the most successful way to quit smoking without using medications?
Usually when I'm asked that, I say that there's three things that are shown to double one's chances of quitting.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them is medications.
Mm-hmm.
I know we'll talk about that today as well.
Mm-hmm.
But the other two are behavior change, obviously.
Mm-hmm. You know,
learning new ways to get along without cigarettes, and that means like dealing with stress and, you know, learning to live in a smoke-free way. And the other one is social support, which can come from family, friends. The fact that society is changing is very supportive. When there's new indoor air laws and bans on smoking in the work site and in restaurants and bars, it's actually supportive of someone who's trying to quit smoking because
mm-hmm.
they can go to those places and not be exposed to a lot of smoke. And telephone quit lines and working with healthcare professionals of all kinds all provide that social support.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things we've learned in our research here is that being supportive is one of the best methods that a healthcare professional can use. There's cognitive behavioral strategies and talking about what will happen if you don't quit smoking and the benefits of if you do. And that's all good as well, but being socially supportive is
mm-hmm.
a powerful factor.
Mm-hmm. Some think that hypnosis and acupuncture are useful for quitting smoking. And in fact, I tried both of these unsuccessfully when I did smoke. Why are these interventions not recommended by the Public Health Service guidelines?
The only reason they're not recommended by the Public Health guidelines is because of what we call the evidence base.
Mm-hmm.
And in scientific circles, whether you're testing a new drug or a new procedure or even a new behavioral intervention, you do randomized controlled trials and you compare a control group to the intervention group that
mm-hmm.
you're testing out to see if it works. And to date, there's been very little scientific evidence that acupuncture and hypnosis are more successful than the control groups.
Mm-hmm.
However, there's a couple of reasons for that, and I should say that acupuncture does show some evidence of success. But it's not a lot, it's not strong evidence yet,
mm-hmm.
but, you know, certainly researchers should still pursue funding and look into it because maybe a certain type of acupuncture or strategies can become a frontline strategy someday, mm-hmm. but for now, the evidence isn't strong enough for public health guidelines to recommend them.
Mm-hmm.
And hypnosis has another problem. First of all, it's the same thing with acupuncture. It's not been studied enough, and it has shown a lot of success in other things. In fact, in my training as a psychologist, I know that there's research that hypnosis can cure warts mm-hmm. in some people because there's some psychological element in some people's wart problem. Well, there's a strong study that showed hypnosis can help that. Well, so it's a powerful intervention. I'm not doing it service. There's lots of things it's been shown to be helpful for. But in smoking cessation, one of the problems is what's a control group that you can compare it against?
Right.
And if you take 600 people and hypnotize them with the same hypnotist using the same strategies and show an effect, what are you comparing it to? The same number of people who are just told to relax or go through guided imagery but not pure hypnosis? Maybe mm-hmm. there's a study that could be done, but it hasn't been done yet, or it's been done in too small of a scale. If researchers can find a way to demonstrate which type of hypnosis for which type of person under which circumstances, it would be promoted by the public health guidelines as a strategy. But
mm-hmm.
for right now, those are two of the ones that maybe are promising, but until the evidence is there, public health guidelines focus on the other strategies that have much more easily defined success.
Mm-hmm. I thought the problem was mine, and I remember going to the acupuncturist, and he put staples in my ears, and I used to have to jiggle them when I wanted the cigarette, and what it did was I increased my amount of smoking when I was doing that, and then I went to a hypnotist, and he put the thing up there, and he tries to hypnotize me, and nothing happened, and then he did it again, nothing happened, he did it again, nothing happened. Finally, he said, well, will you just close your eyes? So I didn't feel like I was really hypnotized. So I thought, well, maybe it was me and not the procedure. But
which could be the case. And from what I know about hypnosis, you know, not everybody will have the same experience. Not every hypnotist is talented.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like a gift to be a good hypnotist. But there is training for it, of course. And usually people, at least at the master's level, are out there
mm-hmm.
Officially doing hypnosis, but there's a lot of people out there that, and you know, stage hypnotists are amazing. They actually do hypnotize the people that mm-hmm. are on stage. So it's a powerful tool.
Right.
And there's lots of anecdotal evidence. I always hear people that say, well, I went to a Holiday Inn for this big meeting. There was 300 of us and the hypnotist told us to close our eyes. The next thing I knew, I was waking up and everybody was leaving and I haven't smoked since, and it's been 13 years.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there's a lot of anecdotal evidence like that, and that's wonderful.
Right.
And if the hypnosis worked, then that's mm-hmm. that was an effect that was happening there. But it could also be placebo effect,
mm-hmm.
and that's true of anything, whether it's got an evidence base behind it or not. If you think something is going to work, that is a powerful effect in itself.
Do you remember the movie On a Clear Day, You Can See Forever?
I remember the title. I don't remember the movie.
I think that she went to the class trying to get hypnosis to stop smoking. And then, you know, it went on and he took her into past lives. But she started out trying to stop smoking. And so it was an interesting movie, I thought. But,
oh, I'll have to check it out.
Yeah. Many people turn to the Internet for advice on health problems. Can this be a successful way for people to get smoking cessation advice and assistance?
We think so. And just like hypnosis and acupuncture, the evidence base for it is yet to be established,
mm-hmm.
but it's an up-and-coming field. And I'm actually co-chair of a series of workshops that are funded by the National Cancer Institute and Health Canada. And it's called WATI. WATI, Web-Assisted
mm-hmm.
Tobacco Interventions. And what these workshops do is bring together researchers, practitioners, and public health officials together. We've had four international meetings so far, and share what's working and what's not working, what questions do we need to ask, how do we design the best kind of a website, for whom, under which circumstances. You know, every population is different. So teenage boys, for example, that are heavy smokers,
mm-hmm.
say they're 16 to 18 years old, they use the Internet a lot. What kind of website will most attract them, and not just to entertain them, but attract them to get them to use successful strategies to quit smoking?
Mm-hmm.
And when we solve that issue, then the next issue is what evidence-based things can they get over the internet that already has an evidence base, such as a self-help manual, a thing called the manual effect. So if you read a stop smoking manual that has the competent advice in it and everything, that's helpful. Well, the internet, you can just put it up as a PDF file or a Word file that people can download. So in effect, it's the same thing as getting a hard copy material. So mm-hmm. you know that that has a certain evidence base to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's telephone counseling, which has a strong evidence base to it. And here at the University of Rochester, Dr. Debbie Ossop has been doing telephone smoking cessation research since the 80s and has contributed to that database, and we still do projects to keep working with telephone counseling.
Mm-hmm.
Well, over the internet, you can do telephone counseling, and with products like Skype, which is free if you talk to somebody else who has Skype, you have mm-hmm. the video as well as the telephone connection there. Well, that's going to be a different evidence base because all of a sudden you're adding a video component to it. If you choose to turn off the video component, then it's going to be the same kind of intervention as a telephone intervention.
Mm-hmm.
But if the video component is there, and I've been piloting this recently actually using Skype, you can hold up things. Like I held up the nicotine lozenges, and I mm-hmm. held up to the screen nicotine patch and the manuals that I wanted the person to look at or download from the internet. And while I'm showing the person these things over the video, we're both on a website at the same time, and I can guide them through
mm-hmm.
a website that has other useful strategies. Even if our phone call over the internet is only 10 minutes, they now have had more help proactively mm-hmm. to use resources that are already available.
Mm-hmm.
So you can tell I'm excited about
this
adventure. But to get back to WATI in general, the evidence base is growing, and there's been some studies, randomized controlled trials, that are showing an effect. And right now, the Journal of Medical Internet Research, JMIR, which has an impact factor of 3.0, and for your listeners who know what that means, it's a pretty good impact factor. So it's a widely respected mm-hmm. online publication site. We have a special issue that's coming out right now. The first several published articles are actually online, and they'll be rolling out to about 10 to 15 articles over the next couple of months. And some of these randomized controlled trials, looking at different aspects of how the internet helps some people quit in these different research situations. We
mm-hmm.
have a group in New Zealand that's successful using text messaging. There's folks in Europe doing various things with combining telephone and the internet. Some researchers in the United States use really detailed internet strategies where you have to fill out at least 30 to 200 questions, but then your website is geared right to you. Your website remembers how many cigarettes you've smoked, why you want to quit, your age, your gender, and that's called deep tailoring.
Mm-hmm.
And that's we need to do more research, but that's a wonderful approach for certain people who really could benefit from that level of a tailored experience. The opposite of that, and we've sort of talked about that as a public health approach, just a free website you go to that's got the basics that you need, maybe some whiz-bang things like interaction with a live person or calculators for how many cigarettes you smoke and if you stop smoking, how much money you'll save.
Mm-hmm.
So the interactivity is good, but it's all anonymous. You don't have to answer questions. You can choose which parts of the websites you go to and get things from. So WATI, Web-Assisted Tobacco Intervention, can mean a lot of different things. And we coined a phrase, it's a popular phrase, it's trying to get a handle on all the different ways people can quit smoking, use the internet, is like trying to herd cats. And every website is like a cat going its own direction. If the website was developed by researchers, they probably have a specific theory they're trying out. Or if it's developed by a county department of health, they probably have
mm-hmm.
something that tries to reach the most people possible. Private companies are doing internet-based interventions. A very popular one is called QuitNet. And there's a free version of QuitNet, so people can go on and get a lot of great help. And then if you subscribe with them, and I think it's still $10 a month, I'm not sure, then you have access to tailored web chat rooms where people of your same interests or level
mm-hmm.
of quitting or gender or whatever
mm-hmm.
Can all interact with each other. And they've been doing it for 11 or 12 years now. They've got communities that have developed that get together in real life and celebrate how long they've been off of cigarettes. Mm-hmm. So that was a powerful internet phenomenon.
Right.
So the internet has all these multifaceted strategies. We just need to get a handle on the research and be able to say what works best for whom and when and under what circumstances.
Mm-hmm. It would seem like that the chat rooms and the text messaging and all of that gives them the support that you mentioned earlier that is important.
Absolutely. And if, you know, you're the kind of person that wants a, sort of a real person talking to you, then your text messaging, for example, that comes over your cell phone could mm-hmm. be from a counselor that you know mm-hmm. and or that you've developed a internet relationship with, and they remember who you are and when your quit date was and how did you do, do you need to talk about anything? Otherwise, good job, you know, you can do it this time, supportive messages like that. Or,
mm-hmm.
or you know, there's even automated text messages so that you could sign up to get one every day, so that every day you get a different
mm-hmm.
strategy or tip. Well, from a public health point of view, impact is an equation, and the public health impact is a function of the effectiveness times the reach. So if you have something that's effective, like supportive messages or talking to a counselor, and you can reach a lot of people, that's a huge public health impact. And if you can automate something like that,
mm-hmm.
then all the cost in developing is up front, and then it runs itself. It could be a lot cheaper than
mm-hmm.
State quit lines, going to your physician, making an appointment, which, by the way, is one of the best ways to quit smoking. Physicians' advice to tell people to quit
mm-hmm.
are very powerful, and they're becoming more and more savvy about these evidence-based approaches and how to refer patients to
mm-hmm.
further support that is truly evidence-based.
Do you find, Scott, that you really have to be motivated in order to use the automated messages? Because what I find is that when I'm involved with some organization and they start sending me these automated messages every 2 or 3 days, I ignore them after a while.
That's a good point. And so such a strategy should have an option to opt out. Otherwise,
mm-hmm.
you'll get annoyed by it. Or if you go back to a,
mm-hmm.
a mind frame where you're really not ready to quit,
mm-hmm.
research shows that if you're truly not ready to quit and you get hit over the head with lots of messages and
mm-hmm.
people trying to make you set a quit date, you're less likely to make a quit attempt in the near future.
Yeah.
So as public health interventionists, we have to be mindful of that and not just, you know, have irresponsible interventions.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it has to be responsible to a person's where they're individually at in their quitting.
Mm-hmm.
And in telephone quit line research, we've got a strategy where you call the quit line and there's an automated message. And in the state of New York, they've adopted that same strategy for the state quit line. So you call up and listen to a new tip of the day every day. Some people call every day for more than a year or two just to hear that tip because it keeps them from going back to smoking.
Mm-hmm.
And they do not stay on the line to talk to somebody live. They
mm-hmm.
just want that automated part. But then during the hours of operation, a quit line will... It's called a reactive quit line. That means the counselors are reacting to getting a call, and they're there to help you with setting a quit date, what your reasons are for quitting, or after you've quit, they keep you from relapsing by helping you with strategies for stress and all that. And that's called a reactive quit line, but a proactive quit line, which we've done a lot of research in, is when the counselor calls you on a schedule and can
mm-hmm.
test out, are you still trying to quit? You know, do you still want these calls? In our state of New York, we send nicotine replacement products to any smoker, first of all, but if they're Medicaid or uninsured, we actually send them an additional 4 weeks of nicotine replacement therapy. But the proactive calls help determine, does the person still want it? Are they still benefiting from it?
Mm-hmm.
And all that. Which reminds me to tell you that every state, I think almost every state, now has its own state quit line.
Oh, it does.
And a nationwide number that you can call
mm-hmm.
is 1-800-QUIT-NOW. So if you're in the state of New York and you call 1-800-QUIT-NOW, it actually will automatically go to the state of New York's quit line because we have one.
That's great.
If you're in a state that doesn't yet have one, then that phone call is answered by a group that's a collaboration between the American Cancer Society and the National Cancer Institute.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a national quit line, but otherwise it'll just send you to your own state's quit line, which is an advantage because your state might have different levels of goodies like the free nicotine patch and nicotine gum or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And many states now have a website that goes along with their quit line. A good website to start with is smokefree.gov. And in fact, I'm one of the co-authors of the online guide that's one of the first links on that page, which is based on a manual that we created, you know, how to quit smoking. There's lots of manuals out there. This one has an online version that's much like the printed version, and it will also link, I believe, to the state quit lines from there and their associated websites. I'm not sure about that. By dialing 1-800-QUIT-NOW, that's kind of your first attack.
Would you give us the website again that you're involved with?
Well, that one's the National Cancer Institute website, and it's smokefree.gov.
Oh.
You know, www.smokefree.gov.
Mm-hmm.
And the CDC has a wonderful website. I think if you just Google CDC and smoking cessation, you can get there.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, if you just type in smoking cessation in Google or one of those products, remember that they're paid by some people, including governments, local governments and national government, to have their sites come up first.
Mm-hmm.
Well, unfortunately, if you type in stop smoking or smoking cessation, there might be some charlatans out there with a website that'll peddle a technique that's not at all based on evidence and scientific research, and it's somebody trying to make a buck.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, you can get everything you need for free. And there's websites for free, there's talking to people for free, there's texting, online chatting with people for free. In fact, at that smokefree.gov, you can chat live right now with somebody. And it's different than instant messaging on your phone. It's instant messaging, it's kind of gone out of style because telephone texting is so popular, but you can be in an online chat one-on-one with an expert from the National Cancer Institute.
Mm-hmm. I imagine that the states that grow tobacco are some of the states that are the most difficult to get smoking cessation implementation.
Traditionally, but that's really changed.
Oh,
there's been some champions in some key states. I think Virginia is one of those key states that has a terrific tobacco control, public health.
They sure do, because we still don't have smoke-free restaurants.
There's a big push for that nationwide. New York State has had that for 3 or 4 years now. Pennsylvania just went smoke-free restaurants recently. And again, from a public health point of view, that has a huge impact on people wanting to quit smoking and being supported in their quitting.
Mm-hmm.
And typically the tobacco industries will set up and prop up a sham company or agency. In New York, they called it the Bar and Tavern Association. And in fact, they had identified some restaurant and bar owners to say that they were part of this organization and they opposed smoking bans because it'll hurt business.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it's such a hollow argument because in states that have done this, California was the first, I think, or one of the first, business went up universally everywhere because smoking, especially in California, is like 15 to 20%, if that. That means 80% of the people do not smoke. Now they want to go to restaurants because they're smoke-free.
Right, right.
And even smokers, not all of them, but even some smokers say, now I even enjoy going out more because I'm not surrounded by other people's secondhand smoke. So whenever there's a push for a smoke-free ban, you'll see the opponents claiming that business will be hurt, but there's no evidence that business has ever hurt. In fact, it's always helped.
Well, I was delighted when New York State passed no smoking in bingo halls, because my sister loves bingo, and so when I go to New York, I would go to play bingo with her. But there were times when I had to leave because it was so smoky in there. And then they tried the smoke-free rooms, which was better, but I don't think now that there's any smoking in the bingo halls.
Yeah, that's a double-edged sword when you have a smoking area and a non-smoking area. It's kind of like saying that it's okay to tinkle in only one part of the swimming pool.
Right, right. Scott, what the smoking cessation interventions are advertised that are clearly not supported by scientific evidence?
Well, there's one, and I probably shouldn't say the name, but I can't remember it right off the top of my head anyway, but it was popular in Canada, and now it's come to the United States, and it's laser therapy, which is similar to acupuncture and acupressure. And the thing that you did with the staples in the ears, I believe they shoot a laser at your earlobes and places on your neck. And they say, first of all, they wrongfully say on their commercials, it's the only non-medication strategy that's ever been successful.
Oh.
Well, that's so not true because of telephone quit lines and the manual effect I talked about earlier. Plenty of behavioral strategies that do have an evidence base. And there's nothing in the literature to support that getting a laser shot at your neck is going to help you quit smoking, unless it's the placebo effect or something in psychology we call cognitive dissonance. If you're going to pay $199, go in there, make an appointment, have them shoot a laser at your neck, by golly, you're probably going to quit smoking because you just spent $199. You look like a fool if you don't quit smoking.
Right.
And placebo effect is not negligible. and maybe people that get hypnotized that are successful, that's part of it. Or even people that use the nicotine patch, you know, maybe it did help them a little bit, but it's the psychology of it, that they're trying something to help them quit, and they can attribute their success to an outside force. So that's all fine and well, but when they're advertising these products for money, and it's not based on evidence,
right?
And some of these places say, you know, we've had a 98% success rate. Well, even the best strategies using physicians and nicotine patches can only boast something
right.
close to 40% success
right.
rate after
right.
a year, which sounds horrible, like 60% of the people didn't quit smoking. But if physicians do that routinely with all their patients all the time, they're going to make a big difference from a public health point of view.
Right.
But anyway, right. When they claim 98% success rate, something's wrong. And what they're probably doing is, if the person goes back to smoking, they're offered to come back for another treatment. And then if they're successful, they'll count that as the success.
Right, right.
And if they drop out or they don't come back, they're not counted as part of the denominator that's needed to say what your success rate is
mm-hmm.
after a year. You can't drop those people out. You have to assume that they're smoking and that they're a failure.
Right.
But they don't do that because 98% is just fantasy.
Right, right. Scott, what kinds of healthcare professionals have you found to be helpful to smokers who want to quit?
All kinds. In fact, the latest public health service guidelines say that combinations of two and three healthcare professionals can have the greatest effect. So if you go to your physician and he or she tells you to quit smoking and then turns you over to the behaviorist that they have in their office or to a quit line specialist or to, or at the same time you go to another specialist like your OBGYN or orthopedic surgeon, and everyone's telling you the same thing, that's the most helpful. Physicians are shown to have the strongest effect, but that's partly because they're the most studied, but also because they're the ones most revered in our society as the ultimate authority on our health.
Mm-hmm.
So when a physician tells you, the most important thing I can tell you today is you need to quit smoking for your health, and I can help.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not ready, come back when you are, but otherwise I can hook you up right now.
Mm-hmm.
That's powerful.
Mm-hmm.
But there's no reason that the nurse can't do that, or a behavioral therapist or psychologist or your eye doctor, your dentist. Dentistry is huge in doing this. And locally, we've partnered with some dentists who have to do oral cancer screenings anyway. So they have to document that they've looked in your mouth and checked for cancers. We've developed just a simple form that they document that they've done that and that they've asked, are you a current, former, or never smoker?
Mm-hmm.
Well, just by doing that, they can now chart that this person is a current or former smoker and remind them to either quit or continue to avoid tobacco because it affects their health of their teeth and their
mm-hmm.
gums and gingivitis and everything else. So, we'll take all comers. Any healthcare provider should be doing this. The difference with a physician, nurse practitioner, physician assistant is that they can prescribe.
Mm-hmm.
And the medications that need to be prescribed that are frontline medications are the nicotine nasal spray, the nicotine inhaler, and then Zyban and Chantix.
Mm-hmm.
There's some other second-line medications that can be prescribed. They're just not FDA-approved as front-line medications, but they do have an evidence base, and that's nortriptyline and clonidine. And only the healthcare provider, the physician, should be aware of all that if that person should be on that kind of a medication and what it might be interacting with. But
mm-hmm.
But other healthcare professionals can recommend the over-the-counter medications, with the caveat that they should check with their physician to make
mm-hmm.
sure that any nicotine won't be affecting other medications. But, you know, you can get over-the-counter the patch, the gum, and lozenges. Someone just asked me yesterday about nicotine water, and it hit the Internet a couple years ago, then got shut down. I don't know if it was the FDA or what, but I heard that it's back. And it might be wonderful, but it's not really regulated yet. But the idea is you can put the nicotine water in whatever dose it's supposed to be in your orange juice or a glass of water or whatever. So it's using something that's been shown to be effective. It's
mm-hmm.
just in a different format.
Mm-hmm.
In other countries, they've got different hard candies that have nicotine in it. In Canada, you can get the inhaler over the counter.
Mm-hmm.
Now the lozenge in the United States comes in cappuccino flavor, which, you know, makes it more attractive to coffee drinkers,
right.
I think.
Scott, I look at holistic health as physical, mental, spiritual aspects, relationships, the environment, and politics. I see that in smoking cessation, you use politics because you're very involved in getting legislation passed, etc. you use the environment because you make all kinds of environmental changes when someone's trying to quit smoking. You work with the mental and the physical aspects. Do you work with spiritual aspects?
Yes, you know, that can be under the category of social support,
mm-hmm.
or it can be under the category of motivation,
mm-hmm.
you know, and your own behavioral change,
mm-hmm.
and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, as a researcher, I don't directly get involved in the politics of it,
mm-hmm.
except to be aware of it, and it is an effective public health intervention.
Mm-hmm. But at the higher levels, they do, right?
Absolutely.
Right.
And advocacy and policy change is why we're having indoor air laws.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't happen for a long, long time. Watch the movie The Insider or the movie Thank You for Smoking.
Mm-hmm.
And those are really accurate movies, aside from the entertainment elements of it, about how the tobacco industry has been very successful in what they do for decades and decades.
Right.
But as soon as the evidence was clear that secondhand smoke was deadly and classified as a carcinogen, that's when it's no longer a good argument to say, well, it's personal choice. If they want to smoke, they want to smoke. We're just providing them with a product. There's nothing wrong with that. But if someone else is affected by that product, then it's litigious. You know, people can get sued. Back when you could smoke on airplanes, stewardesses were getting cancer,
mm-hmm.
and they sued and got a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
They're still providing grant money from that settlement. Then there was the huge master settlement agreement, was it 1999, which provided a lot of funding for smoking cessation efforts. And all that's because political climate changed when it's the secondhand smoke that can affect others.
Mm-hmm. Scott, is there anything else you'd like to say to the listeners about smoking and smoking cessation?
Yes. Do you know how many psychologists it takes to change a light bulb?
No.
Only one, but the light bulb has to want to change.
Right.
And I guess that's a commentary that, you know, it does take one's own motivation and readiness to quit. Some people just aren't ready yet, or they've tried and failed, so they're discouraged, or they think they're too old, or they've already been diagnosed with cancer, or lots of other things.
Mm-hmm.
We know from research that it's never too late to quit. That it takes multiple attempts for a lot of people, and the message should be to keep trying.
Mm-hmm.
So if you fall off the horse, get back on it. And as a public health interventionist and researcher, the other joke I'll leave you with is you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink.
Mm-hmm.
However, if you're really good at what you do, you can make the horse aware of its thirst.
That's good. I appreciate your being with us today, Scott, and also I wanted to congratulate you on your award from the American Cancer Society?
Yes.
Which I think is a great recognition.
And well, thank you very much. It's the local chapter of our mm-hmm. American Cancer Society,
mm-hmm.
and I was very honored to get their first local award for that. It's called the Fight Back Award,
mm-hmm.
and I look forward to seeing the other recipients of that locally. We've got a lot of local champions for tobacco control in Rochester,
yeah.
New York.
Great. Good. And I hope that I'll be in touch with you again at some time. And I thank you again, Scott.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed it.
Good. My second guest is Andy Lopez, an organic gardener most of his life. He experimented and improved upon natural concoctions used by his mother in Puerto Rico. He has taught organic gardening in community colleges, served on horticulture boards, and acted as a consultant to the Department of Agriculture in Florida. He has been featured and published in journals and publications, and appeared on radio and television. He has a radio show, e-books, and books, and his website is www.organicdatabank.info. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Andy, and I look forward to our conversation. First, tell me how you got into organic gardening.
Well, my mom was always organic gardening. See, I grew up in Cuba and Puerto Rico
mm-hmm.
and Costa Rica, and I didn't use any chemicals. I remember when I was so young, I remember looking at a big giant pile of something. I don't know what it was. The steam was coming out, and my great-grandparents had put some type of steamer in there. So when it got heated up, it actually created steam.
Mm-hmm.
And in the sixth grade, I used to sell cow manure patties for roses.
Mm-hmm.
So I've always been organic. So I started at a very young age. In the sixth grade, I started my organic business. I started doing natural lawn care, natural pest control. By the ninth grade, I had 150 customers.
Oh. Ants are a problem for many people inside and outside their house. How do you deal with these naturally?
Well, they're one of the easiest things to deal with because...
Oh, they are.
Well, okay, well, first thing, you have to work within your tolerance level. Because I know lots of chemically sensitive people that can't spray anything. No smell, anything that smells citrus, poof, they go, you know, it hurts, it bothers.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to, there are lots of different things you can choose from. That's what's so good about it. First thing I would do is do something that's very simple. Soap. Get a natural soap. You know what Castile soap is, right? All right, so there are lots of different companies out there with natural Castile soap. Some of them are peppermint, some of them are lavender, eucalyptus, and you name the flavor because basically it's an essential herb that's been made into a soap.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, one herb or another.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so learn to use a soap. Find a soap that you like. If you're chemically sensitive and you're bathing with this soap and you like the soap, well, guess what you're going to use? You're going to learn to add a certain amount of that soap to water and to spray around your place, in the house, wherever you don't want the ants to be. Usually you only have to have maybe a capful of the soap in a quart of water. Try that.
Mm-hmm.
You spray a little bit of soap, just enough that it covers the trail. The ants leave a trail, pheromone trail. The soap will do a good job, especially if it's peppermint, lavender, whatever, you know. So you can use essential oils. They're great. Essential oils are wonderful. I use cinnamon. I use lavender. I use peppermint, citronella oil, pennyroyal oil, this whole blend of them. The key here is if you go into a homeopathic doctor, I would say, look, doc, I'm going to be using this essential oil. What do you think? And he may say, no, no, no.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Lavender is bad for children at a certain age. Many of the essential oils actually affect your body in a way that, you know, the homeopathic doctor knows about. See, sometimes they use it on purpose. Most of the time you have to know, especially if you're pregnant. Don't want to use any essential oil.
Right.
In which case you can, you know, the soaps are good, lots of different kinds of soaps out there. And then there's also citrus, lots of different wonderful natural clean citrus products. You gotta look in the back of the ingredient, it says no petroleum distillate, okay? It has to say organic or natural on it. Even if it says natural, it's a little leery, you have to talk to them. What do you mean by natural?
Mm-hmm.
You know, well, citrus is natural, well, according to the law, any part of it is natural, they could say natural, but that means that the citrus could be chemically grown, chemically sprayed, and have pesticides and still be called natural citrus.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Another problem we often have is gophers and moles in the yard, and what can we do about this?
Okay, so there are short-term and long-term solutions. You always have to start in a long-term solution right away. The sooner you get started, the sooner it becomes effective, and that means that first you have to drive the gophers all over your property. Lots of different ways to do that. You can get any kind of no-clog sprayer to hook up to your hose. Put some castor oil on soap, 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that castor soap we talked about?
Mm-hmm.
Any of the essential ones, lavender, which anything has a strong smell, or there's an alternative. You can also use garlic. It's called garlic barrier.
Mm-hmm.
It's a wonderful concentrated garlic that this company makes, organic garlic. And you know what garlic smells, right? So the garlic berry is like really, really super strong. You can even use that almost straight, add it to water and spray it. Basically, you put it in your no-clog sprayer and you spray your lawn with it, or you spray all the areas that have the gophers or moles, and you try to get it into the tunnels, basically, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So you can even get a deep roof feeder. You know what that is?
No.
It's a pole that you hook up to your hose, tiny little pole you stick in the ground, and water comes out to the end. It's called a deep roof feeder.
Mm-hmm.
It's like 2 feet deep. You stick it in the ground. Normally, you feed trees with it, but... You go with it and poke it right into all the different gopher holes and mole holes or whatever tunnels are there. Get the garlic in there. That would drive them out.
Mm-hmm.
You want to, I add castor oil to that or sesame oil.
Mm-hmm.
So sesame oil and garlic oil, mix the two together, dash the soap so it all breaks up, put that in your no-clog sprayer, put that in, you know, hook up the,
mm-hmm.
Well, it's a very odd mixture because you have no-clog sprayer, then you have the deep roof feeder, right? You have to hook those two together and that hooks up to the hose.
Mm-hmm.
Dig it in the ground and just go through the, and what I do, start in the center and work your way out. You literally drive the gophers out. You probably have to do that a few times in a row, you know, to use the smell, switch
mm-hmm.
around. But that's something you're going to have to do regularly, every month or so, whatever, to have the problem. So then once you drive the gophers out, ideally by then you should have ordered, the best thing to do is plant bulb all around your property.
Mm-hmm.
They're toxic to gophers. Narcissus.
Uh-huh.
Paper white narcissus will kill them dead.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to remember, if you have children, no good, because, you know, they have a milky white thing and the kid wants to play with it, get in their eyes,
mm-hmm.
no good.
Oh.
Right? So
mm-hmm.
if you're free of kids,
yeah.
or if you have older kids, you know, then you can do the paper white narcissus. If you do have kitsch, an alternative is called society garlic.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful. It's not real garlic, but it's a bulb. And you plant those all the way around. And while the garlic is not toxic to them, they definitely don't like eating it. It's a good repellent.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a long term, because every year you have, so they have the company now buy 1,000 narcissus bulbs for $100. That's what I would do. Plant them all the way around your property, and every year you get more and more narcissus. They get bigger and bigger. Eventually you get a knee-high narcissus. No gophers. They won't come anywhere around.
Great. We also get weeds in our yards. Is there something we can use besides herbicides?
The key to natural weed control is having a highly mineralized soil, highly bacterialized, mineralized soil. What that means is you want to have soil with lots of good bacteria and lots of minerals. So that means that you have to apply compost on a regular basis and make sure that your compost has the bacteria and the minerals. That means you have to add rock dust to your compost process so that it has the source of mineral, have some type of manure to that. Put the two together, you have a highly mineralized, bacterialized environment,
mm-hmm.
which is not a good environment for wheat. That's a real long-term solution.
Mm-hmm.
A short-term solution is you use corn gluten. There are many companies out there. One is called WOW, without wheat.
mm-hmm.
And then you have to apply it 4 or 5 times a year because it's basically heavy protein that prevents the weeds from growing. It doesn't stop what's growing there. But it
mm-hmm.
will stop more from coming up, and that's what you do. You stop the cycle of the weed coming up.
Mm-hmm. And how do we keep roses in our yards healthy without chemicals?
Feed them really well. Make like they're tomato plants. They're heavy feeders, see? So
mm-hmm.
at the beginning, you give them a high nitrogen source, let them get big, and then you switch over to a high phosphorus source so they bloom a lot. Careful how you prune. The varieties are very important, too. You just can't grow these junky varieties and expect it to really work. I only grow heirloom roses. Beautiful, beautiful. The roses have been grown for centuries organically, see?
Mm-hmm.
You can't take a chemically grown rose and turn it into an organically grown rose and expect any results. Some simple tools that you can use,
mm-hmm.
The food you do is very important. I invented my own organic rose fertilizer because it's important what you feed the plants. You don't want these high nitrogen stuff. You want a good, balanced, organic food.
Mm-hmm.
One of the key things to pest control is really very simple is milk. It doesn't make any difference if it's whole milk or low-fat milk,
oh.
you know, whatever type of milk,
mm-hmm.
organic milk preferably, but milk is milk. So you take a cup of milk, a gallon of water, spray your roses with that.
Mm-hmm.
That'll control all types of diseases. You know, there are various different types of funguses and mildews and stuff like that. Just simple milk. And if you're doing that, might as well add the food to it. I use that seaweed, my stuff, you know, I add to it. That way you're feeding it at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Really easy. Another tool for pest control is sesame oil. So you add the sesame oil, dash the sesame oil in water, and you can spray. It'll coat the roses with a light sesame oil. What I would tend to do is you only do it when they're first starting because you don't want the sesame oil to compete with the smell of roses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what can you do about a sick fruit tree? I've had them where they get little white stuff on them.
White stuff being on the top of the fruit or on
no, the on the stems.
On the stem. It's some kind of mealybug, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And have you had any, how's your fruit?
I don't have them now, but this was in the past. I had these and they would get this little white stuff on.
No, I mean, is the fruit good?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Good. The fruit is good. Well, the little white stuff basically are mealybugs.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the easiest way to do it is just high pressure water. Especially if you get them before they have flowers, you know, if you don't want to do that, because knock all the flowers off. But really easy to go out there with a high pressure hose and just wash them off. Anything with whitefly, anything white hanging on the plants can be washed off regularly. Definitely, the water will kill it just on contact, just by itself.
Mm-hmm. Great. Do you have solutions that are natural for termite problems?
A key to termites, first of all, you want to understand whether you got the subterranean termites or drywood termites. Find out what type of termites you have because it makes a difference. If you have subterranean termites, it means they come from the soil, which means you have a soil problem, basically. You have to address the conditions of the soil, not overwater because the city water tends to kill the soil. Learn to use compost and have a rich mineralized soil. You'll find that you won't have the problem so much, but you can also use beneficial nematodes in the ground, which will control the soil one. The subterranean ones, basically, you're going to have to learn to use. There are lots of different companies on the market now, electricity, microwave, all kinds of different freezing. There's one particular one that I really love that uses citrus.
Mm-hmm.
So And they use citrus to treat it. Now you can buy citrus and treat the wood yourself. So if you have a home that's made out of wood that's being eaten by termites or parts of it, take that part off, you know, have a handyman, whatever, carpenter come and fix it. But before they put their wood back, you treat all the wood that's exposed to citrus. It's the citrus you paint on. You paint it on, the citrus gets absorbed. The termites, it also controls mold. I was talking to a lady about today about mold. What do I do with mold? What can I spray? Citrus. Nice clean citrus cleaner that doesn't have petroleum distillate. Spray it, you know, you can also, you buy it by the gallon, you paint it on the wood, it sucks it right in, it'll be forever. You'll probably be dead and that wood will still be there 100 years from now perfect because nothing will touch it.
Oh, and we had a big problem with mold after Hurricane Isabel. So that's another topic that is of interest to people in my area at least. Or any area where you have hurricanes.
Right. The citrus is wonderful, wonderful tool because if you have mold growing on wood, you can spray the citrus with it. The citrus will totally eat right through that mold, okay? Spray everything, soak everything with that. It'll eat right through the wood and you can take it right off and it won't be any mold. And it won't come back either.
Now, is that the oil?
Yeah, the citrus. It's called a citrus cleaner. There are lots of different ones on the market. The two that come to bat, can I give a name?
Yeah.
Sure. One's called Citrus Salve. And the other one's Orange TKO.
Oh.
They're the only two on the market I know of that don't have petroleum distillate in. That's the only thing. You know, you open up the citrus and it doesn't smell like citrus. It smells like something else. Well, it's got the petroleum distillate in it.
Oh. Oh.
And you don't want that. You want something that smells a clean citrus product.
A question that one of my listeners had was, are there certain combinations of fruit and vegetables or flowers, or what can you use to keep the deer and the rabbits out of your vegetable gardens?
Well, remember I talked about essential oils, their smell. Remember, if you smell it, the deer can smell it 1,000 times more, too. Okay? Most creatures, rabbits, whatever, they'll smell. So you want to learn to use their sense of smell against them. So there are lots of different ways to learn to spray your property with essential oils. You should pick something you like, lavender. You spray the area with it. Do something like that. You're going to have to spray quite regularly in a variety of different essential oils. I tend to put it in a misting system. You put a little misting system around your fence and have a timer so it goes on, and it will mist water. But essential oil, it needs a little bit, goes through the system. You smell the lavender or you smell the cinnamon. The key is to change. You know, 1 month you say cinnamon, next month lavender, next month the same thing. Now, another way I've learned to control deer is I got a catalog. It's called Mojada Mobeta. I just bought this chili powder called I Am Going to Hell. That's the name of it, okay? It's 500,000 BTUs. So you learn to use hot things that you can use against them. I use Louisiana Tabasco sauce. A little bit of water, spray it on your plants. You can spray it on the roses. But a lot of times you don't have to spray it on the plants. You spray it on the area around the plants so they have to get through that to get to you. See? You usually literally do it around your property, on the edges of your property. You know, you can spray, and they will not be able to, in the more hotter, the more better. See, the hotter it gets, and if you're a nice person like me, you know, I say, well, that's the last resort. I'm not going to use this really hot stuff on them.
Right.
I did that for gophers a long time ago. Used to put cayenne pepper in the tunnel, and one day I found this poor gopher that was destroyed by, you know, his face was covered with cayenne pepper. I said, nope, I am not here to torture these creatures, okay?
Right.
But, you know, if you spray it on the plant and they chew it and they go, oh, you know, I'm not going to eat that, it's too hot. But you said before, you know, that I live here in Malibu, we had fires and we're having all these fires and poor animals have to eat. I lived on the farm. So what I did was I had two gardens, one for the deers and one for me. And one for me, I left it alone, and one for the deer. I mean, for me, I sprayed it with all the good stuff because it's easier for me to pick lettuce that has Tabasco sauce in it. But I used to have the deers and the creatures go because they have to eat too. So sometimes you may want to feed them off to the corner of your property if you can, if you have creatures like that, creatures coming for food, because that's all they're doing, coming for food.
So this will work for rose bushes or anything else to keep the deer out, not just vegetables, but bushes and everything else, right?
Right. You spray the area. Think of it as a target. You know, we have those bow and arrows. You have this target you shoot at. Well, the plant you're protecting is in the center. So you have all these circles going around. Just think of it as the outer layer. So you do the outer circle first, and you spray around that area. And then, you just basically spray around the area of the, you don't actually have to spray the plant. And a lot of creatures won't walk their way through that to get to the plant. You see? But you can't spray the, you know, I have sprayed the, I've gone through many different things, okay? One time I had nothing but my roses smell like garlic, okay? Mm-hmm. Nobody touched them, no creature, nobody ate them, but boy, you smelling them, wonderful garlic. Everything's
right.
Yellow roses, garlic, red roses, garlic, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little extreme, but you can, you know, so I used to spray them and I used to plant garlic at their base, because it was good for vegetables. So if you like garlic on your vegetables, you can spray them with the garlic bear and nothing will touch it.
Mm-hmm.
See?
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I accidentally did was I sprayed an apple tree with garlic. It was kind of cool. The apples tasted like garlic, and nothing ate the apples, see? Really, I go, wow, wonderful idea. And later on I heard that some company was actually doing that and selling it as garlic-flavored apples.
Oh. Andy, you mentioned compost earlier, and what is compost?
Compost is the name we've given to a product that we make that tries to imitate nature. See, nature is the best compost maker. That basically means when things return to a form that is assimilated by the plant, part of the recycling process, things have to be broken down to a form that can be assimilated by the bacteria and the creatures that feed the soil first. See, so, and unfortunately, the human race have to stop that process. We don't have a natural process going on anymore. I mean, look around you. You don't have a forest. We don't have the things that used to be here that would normally be doing this.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to sort of kind of replace it to some extent. That's what compost is. Compost is a way to put the soil, put bacteria and minerals back in the soil again. See?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what compost is. So if you learn, there's a difference between when something's rotting and when something's composting.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people have piles of rotting stuff. They call me up, I got rats in my compost. Well, you ain't got compost. See?
Oh.
Yeah.
And how do you make the compost pile then?
Compost is like cooking. There's a certain mixture that you want to put together. You want to learn to get things from everything around your environment. Pretty much from the plant kingdom, from the animal kingdom, from the mineral kingdom, see? So from the plant kingdom, you get the green materials. And you get brown. There's green materials and brown materials. Green materials has a lot of energy because it has a lot of nitrogen in the green. See, if you take the green material, that's what causes the part of the nitrogen to come from. It makes things cook up really well. The same thing with animal manure. It's got that nitrogen in it and stuff, but it also has the bacteria. It's got the bacteria in it, you know, that you need. You need those little guys to cook the minerals, eat the minerals, because that's
mm-hmm.
what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to get... You have to imitate things. You know, I get something from the ocean, so you get the minerals from there. You get something from the plant kingdom. You get something from the animal kingdom. So not so complicated. You get your food that you cook, you eat, you save some of that, the grass clippings that you save, the, you know, and you learn to mix them. And if you mix them the wrong way, nothing happens. You get
mm-hmm.
this goop of stuff sitting there, and it smells bad, and you go, what did I do wrong?
Mm-hmm.
Because you have to add just the right amount of water and the right, it's like cooking. You get better and better at it, and, you know, the minimum compost bin size should be 4 feet by 4 feet.
Oh.
So it has to be hot, big enough to cook up. So if you make compost that's not heating up, right, doesn't get hot enough, you're not really making compost. You've got something that looks dark and stuff like that, but it's not, you know, the compost has to heat up at least 100 and something degrees, 172 degrees Fahrenheit.
Mm-hmm.
See what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. And Andy, how can the listeners get additional help with gardening and lawn projects?
I have an e-book. My latest natural pest control book, I've turned it into an e-book. Because you can buy the book. It's $20 in any bookstore. It's called Natural Pest Control, right?
Mm-hmm.
Alternative to Chemicals for the Home and Garden. I also run a club. Well, my website is called organicdatabank.info.
Mm-hmm.
But what's interesting is I turned it into an e-book, and now I'm making the e-book available to anybody who wants it. It's free. They can download the, they can go to the website. If they want to join, it's a lifetime membership of $4.95. That means that you're a member to my website. You have me. Basically, this is the way I've set up. I have how-to videos, Ask Andy Department, content like you don't believe. So people have, basically, they're hiring me. When they join for a lifetime, they can say, they have, I'm right there to help them for ants, roses,
mm-hmm.
cucarachas. But if you don't want to join, you don't want to do anything, you should say, I don't want to do any of this stuff. Just give me my free ebook, and you can download the as a PDF file. Lots of links, lots of wonderful stuff in there. Just go up to organicdatabank.info. Also, I have my own radio show, too. On Saturdays, I do it live right from organicdatabank.info.
If people join, you said that they had access to you. Is that by telephone?
There are several different ways, right? We have organic hotline. People call me up between Monday and, you know, Monday through Fridays, 5 to 9,
mm-hmm.
talk to me.
Mm-hmm.
But the website is meant for, because I have already 800 members already signed up on the
mm-hmm.
new website, close to 900.
Right.
So there's Ask Andy forum that they can type in their questions, look at, see what other people are asking. There's content. There's lots of different support ways out there for a person. There's chat. you know, so that they can communicate, and I can communicate with a whole bunch of people. You know, members can call me up anytime on my radio show.
Well, this has been very interesting, Andy, and I appreciate your taking the time to talk with us today.
Thank you. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.